90 WDEO Ypsilanti Detroit, making straight his way this Advent season.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, this weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, for here the angel voices of joy.
Not interrupt the beautiful voice of our friend Bob Rowe, singer-songwriter. He joins us every Christmas with his beautiful music. He'll be with us, of course, in a few weeks. That's his version of the beautiful hymn, O Holy Night, one of my favorites. And it is a very holy night, Christmas Eve, a very holy day, Christmas Day. It's a national holiday honoring not the winter solstice, as I said earlier, but the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And it's very important as Christians that we understand our legal rights when it comes to expressing our faith in the public square. On the phone with us again is the wonderful Tim Wildman from American Family Association. They have a plan, a Christmas plan, that they can't ban. Actually, that's what their press release says. It's really cool. It's on their website, afa.net. These really nice Merry Christmas, God's Good News buttons. Tim, good morning to you.
Hey, Teresa, good morning to you.
Good to talk to you.
I love that
again.
Song, by the way. You could have kept on. It'd get me in the Christmas spirit.
I know.
Here.
Isn't that beautiful? I love that hymn. All right, let's talk about the buttons. I already got mine. I told you during the break we have our bag of buttons ready to pass them out, ready to wear them. They're very nice, perfect size, not too big, not too small, big enough to see. So if you wear them on your jacket or pin it on your bag or your briefcase, people can see them. Now, let's talk about the idea behind this first.
Okay. About 4 or 5 years ago, we began to notice this, but about the button idea became, we began to notice a attack on Christmas around the country in different areas. You've cited some of the stories, but it was, there were little brush fires everywhere, but they represented an overall attack on Christmas, which I believe is an attack on Christianity. That's in essence what it is, by the secularists, by the leftists, by the humanists, by the atheists in this country, those who don't like religion, and they certainly in particular don't like Christianity. So our idea was, let's fight back a little bit here. Let's There's a lot of people who love Christmas, who people who may not be Christians, a lot of them enjoy the Christmas time of year. And so we decided, hey, for believers who wanted to express their love for God and their love for this time of year and Christmas, we would design a button that you could put on your, clothing. And as you said earlier, not be too big, but be large enough where you could see the message. And it's very colorful. It's obviously the traditional green and red of Christmas. And it's got an angel with a horn. And so that's a sign of proclamation, if you will, or announcing that Merry Christmas. In the big, it says Merry Christmas, God, and God's good news. Of course, God's good news is the arrival of our Savior, Jesus Christ, who came to earth 2,000 years ago, and there's a reason we celebrate Christmas in the first place. So it's a way to be a witness at Christmas time, and also to keep the true celebration of the reason for the season out there, and not let those people I mentioned earlier just totally secularize the Christmas time of year.
What's been the response so far to that?
Overwhelming. We can't keep up with the buttons. The button orders have been tremendous, and we also have magnets too that are similar to they're just like the buttons. But if people are interested in it, they can just go to our website, afa.net, afa.net. Again, they say Merry Christmas, and then in smaller words, they say
God's good news.
Yeah. And so I know you got one, right?
I have a bag of them. I
you got a bag of them. There you go.
Yep, we're going to hand some out. We're going to wear them. And then we're also, we just picked up at our church, at our parish, our Knights of Columbus Council has, I was telling you during the break, magnets with the creche scene. And then below it says, Keep Christ in Christmas. We're trying to feature as many of you wonderful organizations that are really helping us keep Christ in Christmas. You know, as we head into the holiday and, of course, a big shopping season next week, we want people to have their priorities, you know, just to remind them that it's okay, you know, to put your faith out
there.
That's
right.
You know.
Merry Christmas is, you know, we shouldn't be ashamed to say that. This whole thing 2 years ago with all the stores, fortunately, most of the stores now who had taken Christmas out and just replaced it with holiday or nothing at all have put Christmas back in. And so that's a good news story to report. And so we're very pleased with that. But what happens is the secularist is what I call them, or the atheist. They try to make it all holiday, and there's nothing wrong with the word holiday. In fact, that's short for holy day.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think the ACLU knows that yet. Or they would go after the word holiday too. But to call the holiday season from Thanksgiving to New Year's, you know, I think everybody understands that's the quote holiday season, but. Let's not take away Christmas and the specialness of Christmas to make it a generic, quote, holiday, because Christmas is the centerpiece of the holiday season, and it's when the world celebrates, Christians at least, celebrates the birth of Jesus Christ. So if we start taking away the specialness of Christmas, that to me that's diminishing the impact of Christ on our world and Christ on the lives of millions of people across America who follow him.
Now, obviously, you've been getting a big response for the buttons and the magnets. When people are ordering them, I'm sure they're not just, you know, ordering them. They're probably telling you thank you or saying something. What kind of things are you hearing from these
people? Oh, yeah. We've got tremendous response the last 2 years in particular for our stand on Christmas. And we're highlighting, and I know you are, Teresa, on your radio program, we're highlighting where these attacks on Christmas are going on around the country and sending out emails to our supporters asking them to take action, you know, where they can to make a difference, to fight back. In fact, your producer, I think, asked me to comment on what happened in Maryland
with the
Fellowship of Christian Athletes there. Mm-hmm. At a high school called Glen Egg, I think is how you pronounce it, high school in Howard County, Maryland. This is just one small example of what Christians face today. The FCA, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes chapter there, they wanted to help the children in their community who had their parents were in prison, and they wanted to collect toys for them to give away during Christmas. The parents are incarcerated or in prison. And so it's a very worthwhile project for that group to do, FCA. Well, the principal of the high school, once they put up their sign saying Operation Christmas Child, the principal came back and said, no, you can't have the word Christmas in there. You've got to put Operation Holiday Child.
Mm.
So, you know, this is the kind of ridiculous stuff that's going on out there that we have to speak out against and fight back against. Also, there was a little lady, you don't know about this story yet, Teresa, but there was an 85-year-old lady who called us last week from Florida. She's in a housing area down there where they're overseen by HUD, and they told her.
Oh, I heard about this. This is where she tried it. She was decorating the place for a Christmas party.
It sounded like a senior citizens type place. You know what I'm saying?
Ugh.
And they told her. In a memo, and then the other residents of that complex, and I don't have it here in front of me, but I can get it for you. But anyway, it's in Plant City, Florida, and they told her, and there were other residents, that A, they couldn't, they had to be generic with the use of the word Christmas to holiday. If they're going to do it anything in the commons area that they had always done, you know, and they'd always celebrated Christmas together there. for those who wanted to. And they'd always put the angel at the top of the Christmas tree. That was tradition, and they told them they couldn't do that this year. They couldn't. Can you believe
that?
You
have to laugh or you're going to cry.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's
ridiculous.
This is what's going on out there. And this whole separation of church and state myth has been so twisted. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So twisted and distorted that we're going to we have to speak up and fight back against this kind of silliness.
Oh yeah, it's just amazing, and you know, I always stress that, you know, I think what is so key here, Tim, is the education. We have to go back.
Right.
So many people are historically illiterate. They're
illiterate,
right. Of course, we know when it comes to many people from the Bible. There's been survey after survey to show that, and we had that new survey that came out. What was it, in October last month, that showed that more people know the ingredients of a Big Mac than they do the Ten Commandments.
That's sad commentary on America, but unfortunately, that's where we are. We got a lot of work to do to educate people on the Constitution and the First Amendment and the history of our country.
Well, I've talked to, when I speak to journalism schools, get this, there's a lot of journalism students who actually think that the words separation of church and state are in the First Amendment.
Oh, if you
which
have...
to me, it's just so, it's just so bad in terms
those
of...
Those are
debate.
Journalism
yeah,
students.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you did a man on the street interview, I would say, I would guess that 90% of people surveyed, if you asked them, is the phrase separation of church and state in the Constitution, they would probably say yes.
Yes. Yeah.
That's how you're right, constitutionally and historically illiterate we've become, and it's certainly incumbent on us, as people who know better, to educate our children on the correct wording of the Constitution, the First Amendment, and religious freedom.
And also, in terms of a democracy versus a republic, we live in a republic,
right,
not a democracy. And the reason it was founded as a republic, you know, you go back to the Pledge of Allegiance, of course, most people probably forget that because they can't even say that in school anymore.
Right.
You know, but it's because if you had a democracy, I mean, the majority would rule all the time, so you'd be going back and forth to whatever the feelings or the persuasions of the people were at the time. You know, there's a great website, I'm sure you're real familiar with it, Wall Builders.
Yes.
Wallbuilders.com, that has all this basic information. That's a good resource for Christians and anyone really to get a good knowledge of, again, because you forget a lot. You know, you go to school and you forget a lot what you learn, but we have to know our rights, and this is what this is all about. You know, we're not talking about taking over because, you know, the Constitution protects all people of faith, regardless of whether they're fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, but we have a right to express our faith in public. We just have to know, how that is appropriate.
Exactly, but the problem is with the other side, the ACLU, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, And those kind of people want to shut down any kind of expression of our Christian faith in the public square.
Absolutely.
They want to shut it down. They want to censor us out. And so that's what we got to fight back against. You're right. And otherwise we'll lose our rights if we don't do it. You know, that's I'm thankful for what the Alliance Defense Fund is doing, what Matt Staver and Liberty Council is doing, what we've done over the years here at AFA, what you're doing, Teresa, to get the word out. So, if we speak out and stand up and fight back, is the only way we're going to preserve our rights.
And have you noticed this when you're shopping and you're checking out at the counter? I always say, they say Happy Holidays. I say, well, Merry Christmas. And most of the clerks are so, they say thank you.
Right.
It's so good to hear Merry Christmas. They'll say, oh, Merry Christmas.
Right, that's right. They want to say it back to you. They're hungry and eager to say it back to you. I have noticed that when I do the same thing. And maybe they've been instructed by their supervisor, don't offend anybody by saying Christmas. But when we say Christmas back to them, they feel like they're free to do that. So, yeah, we need to, as they say, and it's become cliche, but it's so true. It's like what you were talking about with the Knights of Columbus earlier, and their objective is to keep Christ in Christmas, And because the very word itself, I wrote a piece on this a year ago or so, by saying what you said, Teresa, Merry Christmas, and using that expression, that in and of itself is a statement of faith. It's a Christian witness because the word, Mass for Christ, Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to dumb down Americans anymore by just using this generic holiday greeting or happy holidays. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with that, but just don't do that to where we leave Christmas out, though.
Thank you for having these buttons and for doing all that you do, the American Family Association. I like the buttons. They're great, and they're, as I said, they're great for anybody. You can wear it on a lapel. You can wear it on a trench coat, yeah. A coat, a purse, a briefcase, and I think it makes a great statement. Just very simple, and you just have the button on, and you have magnets, too, so you can cover your car with all this stuff. This is great.
People can see them if they want to see them at AFA.net. They can see the buttons before, and then if they don't want to order, they can order, but they can see what they're ordering. And the buttons we're talking about, the design and the color and everything at AFA.net, American Family Association.
All right, Tim, good to talk with you.
Hey, Teresa, good to be with you, and Merry Christmas early.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Well, I can say it in Italian. It's Buon Natale.
I'm going to leave that one to you.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. God bless you. And then we're going to remind people, if you'd like to take a look at these lovely buttons, you can go to the AFA website, AFA.net. Again, that's AFA.net. Trying to feature as many terrific groups such as AFA and the Knights who are doing what they can to keep Christ in Christmas. Really cool. Up on the left-hand side of the AFA website at AFA.net, you'll see the lovely buttons, Merry Christmas, God's Good News, the beautiful angel heralding the coming of the Lord, the angel with the trumpet. And underneath it says, the plan they can't ban. Amen to that. So check it out, AFA.net. Right now, it is 30 minutes past the hour.
Led by the light of a star serenely beaming, with glowing hearts, by his cradle we stand. Truly so led by a light sweetly gleaming, here came the wise men from Orient land. The King of Kings lied thus in lowly manger, dimmed all our smiles, born to be our friend.
Everywhere you turn, you hear about the mortgage meltdown. The one question that everyone asks is, how did we get here? Does this sound familiar? Teaser rates, interest-only loans, adjustable rates, low minimum payments. Those are some of the hooks mortgage companies use to get you to call them. But during the same time, Ken Town from Fellowship Home Lending was saying,
slow down, review all of your options, and get your financial house back in order. Put a plan in place for you and for your family.
Now, who do you call to get a handle on your budget? The companies that were clamoring with wild offers before now and want to clean up the mess they got you into in the first place? Or Ken Town, who has had the same message today he's had for 6 years? Who knows what you're going to hear next from those mortgage companies, but as far as Fellowship Home Lending, you know what you're going to hear.
Whether your goal is to consolidate debt or get out of that adjustable rate mortgage, our goal here at Fellowship has always been to put a plan in place so that 2 years from now, you're in a better place than you are today.
Call 800-660-6433 and talk to Ken at Fellowship Home Lending. That's 800-660-6433 or fellowshiploans.com. From real estate to plumbing, from pet care to dentistry, Catholic business professionals are finding increased business when advertising with the Catholic Business Pages. For more information about advertising or to get your free copy, go to CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. Get better results when you advertise. That's CatholicBusinessPages.com or call 734-930-4536. CatholicBusinessPages.com is brought to you this week by Dave Myler, Ken Zipka, and Jay Hansen of Myler & Zipka Certified Public Accountants. They'd like to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year. They're proud to be partners with Ave Maria Radio in spreading the good news that Jesus is the reason for the season. For all your tax accounting and financial planning, see their link under advertisers at WDEO.net. Myler & Zipka, P.C. Integrity, excellent value, and people dedicated to long-term relationships. CatholicBusinessPages.com, your best choice.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome back. Good to be with you. Catholic Connection, coast to coast, distributed through EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Again, happy to be with you and excited to talk about this new book. It's called The Ironies of Faith, The Laughter at the Heart of Christian Literature. Our guest is Dr. Anthony Michael Esselin. He's an English professor at Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island, receiving his BA at Princeton and his PhD at the University of North Carolina. He is fluent in several languages, including Latin, Italian, German, French, Anglo-Saxon, and some Greek. Before coming to Providence, he served as an assistant professor at Furman University in South Carolina and has written 7 books on the English language and literally and biblical and biblical studies, and he also contributes on a regular basis to Touchstone Magazine and Crisis Magazine, among other magazines. Doctor, good morning. Great to have you on the program.
Morning. It's great to be here.
An interesting topic because, really, as a Christian, we get the ironies of the faith, you know, the contradictions, the oxymoron, so to speak, the first will be last, the last will be first, all those other things that sound so strange to the outside world. Why look at this through literature, do you think?
Well, it's one thing to talk about these things as sort of bald theological propositions, and they'll go in one ear and out the other, but when they're attached to a story, a work of art, which is what Christian artists and poets have done almost by nature without really thinking about it, well, then you really remember them. Then you understand, for instance, that the salvation of a guy like Scrooge in Dickens' Christmas Carol comes from, of all places, the little boy, a little son of a poor clerk who has to wear an iron brace and use a crutch, and yet his salvation is going to come in large part through that little child.
And these other examples too, because you have some great examples in the book.
Yeah, I mean these things are almost second nature to Christians. Because we grow up with the scriptures and we grow up grow up immersed in Christian literature and art. We find it natural to think that somebody could be saved from an unlikely place like that, or you think of Shakespeare's Tempest, wherein the principal character, the Duke Prospero, really finds his little baby girl as God's means of salvation, providential for him. He would have despaired, he says to her, except that she, a little 2-year-old kid, bore up under the storm as their boat was set out to sea, a leaky boat, and they reached the island's shore, and he survived and prospered. It's that sort of thing is second nature to Christian artists, but critics who look at that from the outside, who don't understand the Christian vision, I think find it very difficult to figure out.
So would you like more non-Christians and Christians to read your book?
No, I don't know. What I think has happened is that Christians have lost their heritage, because all this literature that we're talking about is basically the literature of the West since the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
That's been taken over by more or less secular people in the schools and the colleges. Some of those secular people are well-intended. They don't have a deep understanding of the Christian vision. And by the way, when I'm talking about this, it also includes the Jewish scriptures and Jewish literature that springs from that, like the Jewish folk tales of Isaac Singer. It's the same sort of thing going on there. These kids who have these teachers in their schools are really not introduced to the fullness of the literature. They don't engage the art at its very depths. So I'm writing the book. I wrote the book for Catholics and other Christians who have a hankering for the art of our past, but have had roadblocks put in their way, ideological roadblocks, sometimes just the roadblock of unfamiliarity, because people don't read this material anymore.
Why should, let's say, someone who's a Christian who thinks, well, gosh, you know, I understand the ironies of the faith, that's why I'm a Christian, you know, I understand that the first will be last, the last will be first. John Paul II said, you know, you don't find yourself until you lose yourself in Christ. So would this be affirming for Christians, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. To take up a thing that John Paul was always reminding us, we're embodied beings. And that means that we don't just live in a set of abstract propositions. We live in our bodies, and we live in a story of salvation of all mankind, but also our own story of faith. And it's stories, ultimately, that
that grab us, that mean the most to us, hence the Gospels. Not just a set of Stoic aphorisms, but the story, the salvation story of this man, Jesus, who was the Son of God, and what he did, and what he said, and what happened to him, and why it was surprising, and why the apostles themselves didn't understand it. And yet then they finally came to understand. It was the last thing they would have expected, that he would die in such a way. But after he rose from the dead, and they were given the Holy Spirit, they saw, well, of course, it was the perfect way. Well, when we read stories that are steeped in that story, okay, and that story just sums up the entire Old and New Testaments, when we read stories that are steeped in that, we never forget them. And then we see that our own lives replicate that story all over again. I mean, that's why the Chronicles of Narnia and Lord of the Rings were so powerful.
Yeah, because we're seeing, I'm wondering if you're seeing people returning to this kind of thing, because of the Chronicles of Narnia, for example, that movie that came out was so popular and really did very well, and also Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, the Chronicles of Narnia as a movie was really quite good. It was better than I expected. I was not a fan of the Lord of the Rings movies. I thought that the directors did not really understand the nature of goodness and the power of goodness, even coming from unlikely places like hobbits in the Shire.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really get that, or the self-destructiveness of evil. They turned evil into just ugly monstrosity, rather than some worm gnawing at the heart of the human soul, or, well, I guess a wizard. Mm-hmm. soul.
Do you think, though, that at least it's a sign of hope that Hollywood, in some cases, rare as it may be, is starting to look at some of these classics and trying to put them out there on the screen for all of us to try to take another look at them?
Yeah, I think so. I don't hold out a whole lot of optimism for Hollywood, I guess we'll take what victories we can from that arena. I really wish, though, that Christians would pick up these old books and this old poetry. It's their heritage. It's a treasure. If you'll forgive the opinion I'm about to express, it's like the modern American Catholic Church, like a dragon snoring away on a hoard of musical and artistic riches, and we don't get to hear any of it. We don't get to see any of it because of people with various modern liturgical agendas, but. Oh my gosh! All these riches are there, waiting for somebody to look at them again and to be inspired and moved to the depths of their souls by.
Why is irony so important to our Christian faith, Doctor? Do you think?
I think the whole idea is central to both testaments. We human beings could, I suppose, invent a God or a set of abstract ideas about God. Certainly various philosophers have. But we could never really come to worship that set of ideas. We only worship a being. But if God is a being, and he is, then our relationship with that being is going to be, because we're all limited human beings, is going to be full of surprises for us. Going to involve all kinds of twists and turns, as in a love affair, and our being reminded that in fact we don't know everything, and that our relationship with God is going to strike us all the time as full of ironies, as full of unexpected coming to knowledge by us, because we're ignorant or we have our eyes turned the wrong way. If we're reminded of that. Well, then our faith is dramatic. It begins to take on a body, and not just lapse back into, this is just a set of comfortable things that I happen to give my assent to. This is way of life. This is a story. This is the great drama of the cosmos, and I'm living in it. That's almost a faith on an entirely different plane.
Mm. Now, you mentioned C.S. Lewis, of course, and mentioned Tolkien. What other great writers and contributors to literature do you go through in the book?
Well, quite a few. The poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, Charles Dickens, who's deeply Christian, though his theology was messed up, always writing, as I say, about Christmas and Easter in one fashion or another. The 20th century novelist, and wholly ironic, Graham Greene, but also Shakespeare, Milton, Dante, St. Augustine, the English poet George Herbert. So the book goes from Scripture through Augustine to literature of the Middle Ages, Renaissance, in the 19th century, Robert Browning, clear into the 20th century, and a range of literature to the autobiography of Augustine, the Confessions, but also poetry and novels and short stories. So there's something in it for everybody.
Oh, great stuff. Doctor, how do we get the book?
I think it's available on Amazon. It's published by ISI Press, and it's Ironies of Faith, the Laughter at the Heart of Christian Literature.
Oh, great stuff. Thanks so much, and very interesting thing to look into, not only just for Christians, but I think for non-Christians as well. And it's also, I understand, available at our Ave Maria Radio bookstore with a slight discount. You can go to avemariaradio.net. Again, the book is Ironies of Faith, The Laughter at the Heart of Christian Literature by Dr. Anthony Esselin. Again, Ironies of Faith, The Laughter at the Heart of Christian Literature. Doctor, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Well, it's been great. Thanks a lot.
God bless you. Thanks for your work.
The Christmas season is a busy season for credit cards, so Michigan Catholic Credit Union is making it well worth your while to use your MCCU Visa card with their holiday Visa balance transfer. Here's the deal. Members who transfer a minimum of $500 to their current or new MCCU Visa between now and February 29th will get a companion airline ticket voucher and 1% cash back on the transfer amount. Talk about getting credit for using your credit. Plus, there are no transfer fees and you can keep the airline ticket for yourself or give it as a gift. Members must qualify for the transfer and increase credit line if applicable, with a $500 minimum and $10,000 maximum. No scorecard points will be awarded on the transferred amount, and there's one airline ticket per Visa account. If you're Catholic, Michigan Catholic Credit Union is where you belong. For complete details on getting credit for your credit with the holiday Visa balance transfer offer, stop by the MCCU office nearest you or visit mishcathcu.org. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts. Questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
For our Advent reflection topic this year, we've chosen Our Late Holy Father's Theology of the Body. Father Ricardo studied it extensively while earning his licentiate in sacred theology. On our program this week, Father John's title is, In the Age to Come, Neither Married or Given in Marriage. Listen to Christ is the Answer, Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet. Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
It's a Friday morning. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. My name is Teresa Tomeo. The author with us is Antoinette Bosco. The book, Mother Benedict, Foundress of the Abbey of Regina Laudis. And it's a beautiful story, an amazing one, as a matter of fact. And you may be familiar with this abbey because of the story of Mother Dolores Hart. And, of course, Dolores Hart was a former actress and still actually keeps in touch with her folks and her friends in Hollywood. But it's an amazing story of faith and a very, very unique abbey, and one that's available for contemplative nuns, which was established in, it's fascinating, really, to any audience. And it was actually captured in the 1950s movies, Come to the Stable, starring Loretta Young as Mother Benedict. And this is what, the movie was based on, actually. But the author with us is an award-winning author, and she's written 16 books. She's, of course, well-known in Catholic circles as well as secular media, publishing several articles in different publications. But this morning she's going to share with us the fascinating story of Mother Benedict and also now Mother Dolores Hart. Antoinette, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, how did you first get interested in the Abbey?
Well, you know, I first heard about the Abbey of Regina Laudis when I was a college student at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, my hometown. And I used to read incessantly, you know, and I had read something in one of the papers about this newly formed abbey in Bethlehem, Connecticut. It just caught my attention, you know, and so I was curious about it. And it was later on, you know, several years later, when Come to the Stable came out, and I read something about that it was also also based on this abbey in Bethlehem. So from that point on, I was very curious and very interested because, I, you know, I was a good Catholic girl. I always wanted to be a nun like everybody wanted to be back then, you know. And so it was always in the back of my mind that one day I would try to get there. Well, in 1980, the end of 1981, I was offered a position to help start a new newspaper in Connecticut. A very wealthy man was starting it, called the Litchfield County Times. And when I got up there, there was a young photographer, and I was talking to him about various stories we might have to check out. And he said, oh, one I really would love to photograph. He said, there's an abbey in Bethlehem, Connecticut you've probably never heard of. I said, what do you mean? It's in Litchfield County? He said, yes, it's Litchfield County. Well, there was my opening right there. So I went in the early 80s to Bethlehem, Connecticut, wanting to write about it. And of course, I in the book, I tell my, you know, funny stories about this wonderful, wonderful place. Like from the very beginning, I knew that I had found a kind of another home, you know, in a way. But they were very funny, you know. Well, Antoinette, before you can write about us, we have to get to know you and we have to get to trust you. Which made sense, you know. So, but I started doing stories immediately, because they had an unusual priest there from Japan. He had survived the Nagasaki bombings, you know, and he was a devotee of the abbey and had been there very many times. And so in 1982, I went right there with their, you know, invitation that I could interview him, even though I couldn't do a story, basically, you know, big story about the abbey. And it ran on the anniversary of those terrible bombings, and it was my first entry into realizing the kind of wonderful people that had come to the Abbey over the years and the wonderful work that they did. So that's how I got started. And as I say, many, many stories after that. And ultimately, in 1996, when the Lady Abbess asked me to begin interviewing her to write her life story, it was an honor, a real honor, to be able to have that invitation.
Now, tell us about your first meeting, Dolores Hart, Mother Dolores Hart. Now.
Well, you know, my first meeting with Mother Dolores came toward the, I would say it was I mean, I had seen her, you know, but my actually get to talk to her, it was in 1991. My youngest son, Peter, who had been bipolar, had committed suicide. And, of course, where did I go for peace and comfort was to the Abbey. And I'll never forget, I was there and had been in the chapel and I was leaving. And one of the other sisters said, oh, come here, Mother Dolores wants to meet you. And she was standing there, you know, behind the grill. And she put her hands out, and I mean, I want to tell you, you want to really feel you're talking to somebody from right from heaven. The beauty of this woman was extraordinary, but it was just a beauty that emanated not only from her beautiful face, but really from her beautiful soul. And of course, we became very close friends. And in all the years that I did the interviews, this book, by the way, was the interviews went over a period of 6 years.
I was going to ask you how much time you spent.
Oh yeah. Yes. I mean, I actually started it in 1996, but Mother Dolores sat in on every interview. She read everything. I mean, she is so connected to this book that I wrote that, you know, my gratitude to her is enormous. And then she also wrote the foreword to the book.
In terms of the type of life that they lead, share that with us. I know this is an abbey for contemplative nuns. For those average lay people, what does that mean? What kind of life do they lead?
Well, first of all, they are cloistered nuns. In other words, they live at the abbey, and they don't go out and teach in schools or do anything, you know, of that type. All their work is really centered in the place. There's a theology of place with the Saint Benedict, you know, and so the work is done there. But the interesting thing, there are 40 of them there. There are two or three of them that are not yet fully professed. So it's a thriving community of nuns, but each one is a professional. They are a professional in their own background, their own work. I mean, one of them is a medical doctor, like Mother Benedict was, and we have a couple who have PhDs from Yale, and one wonderful friend of my Mother Immaculata, she was a lawyer in Connecticut and a representative. you get the idea. I mean, a couple of marvelous artists were there. You have Mother Placid, who was the first nun that I met there, fantastic artist. And her niece is also an artist there. And, they're fantastic women. But it's not only that they carry out a mission with their own talents, but the mission goes out to touch everybody who comes to the Abbey. And so many people come there for spiritual help and guidance, and you name it, people have been there. I've met so many people there. They also have a wonderful program because they, you know, they have their farm and their animals and their growth, and they have a farm program for young people who can come and stay up to almost a year learning about, I think it's finding God through the land, you know. So they're incredibly talented women and people who reach out and of course they still are true to their Benedictine traditions, you know, with the chanting. They have produced several chant tapes that are called Women in Chant that can be found through the internet to be purchased. They are marvelous. Talented all the way around. Even in the book, there are pages and pages of beautiful photos. And it's one of the nuns who worked, in the photography department to put all of that together. Mm-hmm. And Mother Dolores herself was a chief photographer for years and years and years. And the photography that she did was amazing. Because, she is so ultra-talented.
Right, right.
So
from what I hear, and I know you mentioned this too, but a friend of mine who's with a wonderful ministry in the Detroit area called the Holy Trinity Apostolate went out to meet her and spend time with her and has several letters from her and corresponds with her. She said she is as beautiful as she was when she was a movie star.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, there was Elvis Presley's birthday that came a few weeks ago,
uh-huh.
And one of the papers here, the New Haven Register, did a story on Mother Dolores because she made a couple of movies with Elvis. And they had a picture of her, and I swear you would say that, has she grown older at all?
Mm.
she is just as beautiful as ever. And she also, she has an illness that's peripheral neuropathy, which is a nerve problem that causes extreme excruciating pain for walking, and she's become the national spokesperson for this illness,
mm-hmm.
and even testified down in Washington for it. So she's involved with the way I look at it. Whatever needs to be done, she would be one who would be involved with it, in a way that would match her vocation and her professional work.
Antoinette, when we come back, we have to take a quick break. I'd like to talk more not only about the book, but also about Mother Dolores' heart and her journey. She's a convert to the Catholic faith, and then, of course, she has this great career in Hollywood, and I'm sure had she stayed in it, she would have, succeeded beyond our wildest expectations and dreams. And she leaves all of that to go to the Abbey and become a contemplative nun. So it's an amazing story, and I know that this in the book as well. We're talking with author Antoinette Bosco. She's also a syndicated columnist, an award-winning journalist and writer for newspapers and magazines. She's been doing that for over 25 years. And some of her publications, where her articles have appeared, Women's Day, Parade, Guidepost, Reader's Digest, Ladies' Home Journal, and more. And she's appeared in over 20 TV shows and is the author of 16 books. The latest, of course, is the one we're talking about this morning, Mother Benedict, Foundress of Regina Laudis Abbey, published by Ignatius Press. You can go to Ignatius.com to find out more information on the book. If you have a question for Antoinette, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. We'll be right back.
The car business is a numbers business, and here are some pretty impressive numbers for Gene Butman Ford, starting with 50. That's 50 years they've been serving the Ypsilanti community, which translates into 2,600 weeks or 18,250 days. You can only imagine the number of vehicles that includes and the number of satisfied customers. Just think about it. No one stays in business that long without doing things right. And isn't that the kind of company you trust to sell you a car? Here's another impressive number. 6 years winning the President's Award for Customer Sales and Service. That puts Gene Butman Ford in the top 5% of dealers nationally. Now is a great time to find out why so many people have spent so many years buying from Gene Butman Ford. Because they'll beat your best competitive deal and donate $100 to the Catholic organization or church of your choice. Visit Gene Butman Ford at 2105 Washtenaw Avenue in Ypsilanti, or online at ButmanFord.com.
Sister Sarah, look what I got. A new dog.
Hey, he's really cute. What's his name? Where'd you get him?
His name is Chico. And this little guy is real smart. Ain't that right, Chico?
Neat. Hey, does he do any tricks?
Does he ever? He can count by barking. You want to see?
I sure do.
Okay, Chico, listen up. What time does Nose from Above start on Sunday afternoon?
Tom, we air at 4:30 on Sunday, not 4. I mean, it's cool that Chico can bark up to 4, but it's not the right answer. The right answer is 4:30 on Sunday afternoon.
But sister, I can't have him bark up to 30. I'd lose count. Now, maybe I can get him to tell everyone when we go on the air on Wednesday and Saturday nights.
That's a lot of barking, Tom. The dog's cute, but no offense, kind of a dumb trick.
Okay, when does Nose from Above air on Wednesday and Saturday night?
Oh, give it up, Louie. Chico, you're such a little cutie pie.
Well, he's a smart cutie pie. Now, how many barks was that, Chico? I lost count. Okay, let's start again. Bark to 9.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Song. Connie Francis from the film, which came out, I believe, in 1960, Where the Boys Are, starring Dolores Hart, George Hamilton, Connie Francis, and other well-knowns. And that was one of the movies, actually, that helped put Dolores Hart on the map. And she is now Mother Dolores Hart, and she is part of the Regina Laudis Abbey. And we're actually talking about the Abbey this morning with the author who wrote the book about Mother Benedict the Foundress. The book is actually called Mother Benedict the Foundress of Regina Laudis Abbey. And Antoinette Bosco is an award-winning journalist and writer for many newspapers and magazines. And she's been writing for over 25 years, and she's published 16 books, and this one is her latest. You know, that movie is still such a classic, Antoinette. And
oh, yeah.
Dolores Hart, such a beautiful, beautiful movie star. I mean, just one of those glamour-type women, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And people forget when we talk about her that she also played Francis of Assisi.
Francis of Assisi,
she
St. Clair,
Claire,
right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And she was just very beautiful in there. And I think it was, you know, shortly after that, you know, she finally made her decision. But, you know, she was an amazing person. For one thing, she's a convert. She was 10 years old when she became a Catholic.
Mm.
It was a grandfather, I think, that she says, you know, helped her to find that path. But, you know, I think when you go back to her childhood, her early years, they were very difficult. Her father was a very glamorous male actor who looked as if he was going to be like the star of the 40s, but he was drafted. I mean, or I don't know if he was drafted or if he signed up for World War II, and by the time he came back, there were other male movie stars who had become famous, you know, and so he couldn't get roles, and he really became an alcoholic, and it was very difficult for her. So she kept turning, to God, you know. But while she was making these movies, she also was engaged to a very lovely man, Don mm-hmm. Robinson. I've met him at the Abbey. He never married, and because she finally had, she was in a play on Broadway, The Pleasure of His Company, and a friend of hers in the play knew about the Abbey and invited her to come along and see it. And from the time she stepped in to Regina Laudis, she felt, I think, that there was a draw that she had never found anyplace else. And that was, I think, in 1957, the first time. But anyway, and she then she went back, and a couple times she had talked to the Lady Abbess, and the Lady Abbess said, no, you go out and do your work. When you're ready, you will know. And it was 1963 when she entered. And she will acknowledge it was extremely difficult. She had many, many tears. She struggled with her decision. But that's the only way that you have a valid vocation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody ever says, oh, no, I never had a doubt, I'd be really worried about
that.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So she was great. And, I mean, she did what was asked of her. Like, here's this movie star. Do you know one of the jobs she did at the Abbey? She found that she was very good with wood and saws and et cetera, and she made coffins in the Abbey for the nuns who died. And then she found out she had a relative in the past who had been a coffin maker. I mean, she doesn't do that now, but that's the kind of person she is. I mean, talented, but willing to always learn. And today she's the prioress at the Abbey, you know. And she's the only Catholic nun who's a voting member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, you know.
Yeah.
But a beautiful woman and a gift to this world.
And she went back to Hollywood not too long ago, right? Was it last year for some big event, I think?
Yeah, well, she got an honorary doctorate degree from a college out there. And, yes, and I think there was a big party. And, of course, the fact that she is this national spokesperson now for this painful condition called peripheral neuropathy, that was written up and so it picked up in news stories, Associated Press picked up the story, I think, you know, and it went into newspapers around the country. So her name stays up there, definitely. But she's just, a gift from the Lord.
What can we take? What did you take from the Abbey and all your research and spending time with the
Well, so much more than I could even describe. First of all, I had been going there and writing stories, and it took me until 1988, which I think was when the story I really wanted to do about the Abbey came out with full photos and everything, all about what this Abbey was all about and what it meant. And I continued doing stories on some of the individual nuns there, like Mother Stephen, who was a farm girl from the Midwest, and she came, and she was a teacher too. And when this was in 1953, and all of the people in Bethlehem, Connecticut, you know, said, "You're never going to grow anything here, not in this land, not in this soil," you know. And she said, "We will." And she turned it into a farm. I mean, what a wonderful person she is. And, there were just so many stories that I did. But then, as I mentioned to you before, my son Peter died, by suicide, and it was so, so traumatic. I'm a single mother of seven children, and I had been since the late 60s. I raised them myself, that was my life, my family. I supported them through my writing. And, it was like something else. I had a place to go. I could go to the Abbey, and I could pray there. I could stay there. I could find comfort there. But then 2 years after that, my son John and his wife were murdered. They had just bought a house in Montana.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were blown away. And it turned out it was the 18-year-old son of the people they just bought the house from. Now I had lost two sons tragically. Where do you go? Where do you go to get any way to survive something like that? And it was at the Abbey. And they just opened up their hearts and their doors to me. You know, I continued working. I had to, and all of that. But I always had a place to go. And then when the Lady Abbess asked me in 1996, she said, I think I should have my story down and you're the one to do it. It was an honor for me to do that. And so then, of course, I learned so much more. I learned so much more about her as a person. And, I was a pre-med student in college. She was a medical doctor. She was just an incredible person. The more I got to know her, the more I got to love her. And she was hard. I mean, she had to be hard to, form an Abbey like this. And she got sometimes severe criticisms, quite unjustly and unfairly, by, some people who didn't like sometimes what they would be told they should do, or be advised to do when they came to the Abbey. And she was always following the rule of Saint Benedict, and she just said that the way it was with her, if you're a Christ lover, you must be continuously engaged in living the gospel and sharing it with all. And she really believed that a contemplative woman was not somebody who was locked away someplace, but a very thoroughly alive woman connected to all of life and life-giving in her very being, in her relationships and in her work. So it wasn't, you go away to hide and do nothing, It was, not of that at all. It was being vibrant and vital for God and for people. And I learned that from her, and, I think I always kind of, had an idea that's how life should have been, but she solidified it. And, with all of the kindness and love that they were able to give me.
Let me ask you, in closing, we have about 3 minutes left, and again, hang on, because I have some more questions that we don't have time for that I want to answer, because it's such a great topic. But in terms of what, in general, when we read the book, what do you hope people will get from it? I mean, in terms of this kind of a lifestyle is so seems so far from so many of us, Antoinette, in terms mm-hmm. of the craziness that's out there and all the, you know, the yes. busyness and the media and this constant, you know, grabbing for our attention from different areas. What do you hope people will get from the book?
Well, you know, I hope that that you come away reading this book and saying there is another way to live. We don't all have to live in this television world and internet world and all of that, you know. And that basically what these women are, they're a witness to the mysterious ways that God can use all of us to accomplish the work that he wants to be carried out in this world, but that it doesn't come easily. That you can go someplace, and it is a test of your faith and your endurance, you know what I mean? No matter where you find yourself in life, we're all being tested all the time. And so where they are, it's no different in a way from what we all have to go through because we're all being tested. But that, you know, at the same time, you can make a different choice, and it's just as valid as any other choice that you could make, so long as it's cooperating with the grace of God. I don't know if that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
But it does to me because, you know, that's what I found there. I found that, you know, people who are troubled or lost or alone or confused, they could go and be received warmly, no questions asked. Where else can you find that in this world? You know how you work, and all these things happen to you, you know, and you lose your jobs or you have people you can't stand working with sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very hard. But here's a place where no matter what, you can be received warmly and perhaps find some answers to your questions. Or if you can't find answers, you can at least find here a new form of grace that you can, you know, put in your soul.
And I also think some peace and quiet, which we don't have much of these days, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. To this day, any time I have, you know, it's, you know, 45 minutes from my house, I can drive over, just go into the original chapel. They have the original chapel, and now they have their church that was built. The nuns designed it, and literally, it's amazing. But, you know, I can sit there for a half hour, an hour, and restore my soul.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. What a terrific story and a great book. Mother Benedict, Foundress of Regina Laudis, our guest, has been the author of this new
yes.
book by Ignatius
and
Antoinette Bosco.
And
you can go to ignatiuspress.com or also AveMariaRadio.net. We have it on our bookstore online with a little bit of a discount for you. Again, that's AveMariaRadio.net. The book, Mother Benedict, Foundress of Regina Laudis, the author, Antoinette Bosco. We'll see you on a Monday. Have a great weekend.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Could your family use an extra $500 to $5,000 each month? Hi, I'm Eric Kasem, speaking for the 3-Step Home Business Plan. We're looking for a few good people with Christian family values who'd like to earn an extra $500 to $5,000 a month. We'll teach you everything you need to know to earn thousands of dollars each month working from home. Call 800-281-7874 for your free info pack right now. That's toll-free, 800-281-7874.
Eric Tarahowski is a college seminarian at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. Without the help of the Fisherman's Fund, Eric might not reach his goal of ordination to the priesthood.
Absolutely, the Fisherman's Fund has been significant. My education wouldn't be possible without it. The fund covers most of my seminary tuition. It really helps my parents, too, since they're absorbing much of the financial burden.
You must be grateful for the Fisherman's Fund, then.
Very grateful. Now I can focus on my studies and my spiritual formation without worrying about tuition each term. And later, after ordination, not worrying about repaying student loans.
The Fisherman's Fund is a lay-driven outreach funded completely by the laity. It exists solely because of your generosity. Could you help seminarians like Eric and Sacred Heart's many lay ministry students to reach their goal of serving in your parishes? Call the Fisherman's Fund at 313-883-8779. There are many ways to help. Call 313-883-8779.